Well, welcome again to Fun and Learn with Inner Garden. I'm Barbara Leonard, and I'd like to introduce my co-host, Jeannie Martin. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Barb. Good to be here.
Yeah. We're going to talk about some great things. We're asking people to phone in. They can phone in on a toll-free number, and they just want to talk to us. But we were talking a little bit earlier about some of the things we'd like to talk about. What would you like to start off there?
Well, I was thinking that one of the things that keeps crossing my mind and that I'm noticing as we move into what some people would call a shift, that it's important for people to know that within inside of themselves there's a great power, and that power is connected to all dimensions, if you would like to put it that way. So my firm belief is that as people find their own inner power, they also expand their knowledge into those other dimensions and become more of what they really, truly are.
And really, we have that when we come into this world. We basically learn some of these other things, like feeling no confidence in ourselves and things like that, from the environment we're in, don't we?
Yes, we do. And unfortunately, and it's a good thing to let people know that children, particularly between birth and 11 years old, are like blank computers. It's like going to Staples, buying a computer, and starting to program it. So it's very, very important that people are aware that when they're around children, to give the most positive input that they can, because that information is going to stay with them for life.
Yeah, did you see the movie On the Shift with Wayne Dyer?
No, actually, I didn't. No, I didn't.
It's really interesting, because in one particular part that really struck me, because I could see a lot of myself when I was young and raising my own children, and there was a young woman there with a couple of children and a husband, and it seemed like she wanted to be able to be everything to them that she could be, you know, get him the cup of coffee, do all of that kind of thing. And she just seemed to always be living on the edge, you know, worrying about the kids, you know, whether they were behaving the way they should, and, you know, just not really relaxing and allowing them be children. And I can relate with that when I was first starting to bring children up, because we had five in 9.5 years. And the first couple of children, we kind of thought, oh, you know, we've got to make them perfect little people. You know, they couldn't be kids. They had to be perfect little people. They had to be well-mannered. They should think for themselves and, you know, be able to do all these things, because it's the way we were brought up. And it pretty soon started to shift in my own mind that, you know, they weren't doing things as much through the love as they were doing it through the fear. So we kind of changed our ways as time went on, and not that we didn't have some guidelines and discipline there, but we certainly didn't rule like as if we were little dictators either. You know, and so with this particular girl, she gets into a location where Wayne Dyer is, and she's trying to get the kids to come and eat when she wants them to eat, and do things when she wants them to do it, and he just kind of gives her a little nudge and says, you know, they're children and they'll come when they're hungry, so to speak. And so she kind of changed her ways a little bit. And then he kind of had a talk with her about the fact that if she could kind of let go of the control there, she'd have more time to maybe be creative within herself.
Which was interesting. And you know, children, when they're very small, let's say up until about, again, 9 or 10, They have no critical mind. What they do is they learn by the emotions and the feelings that they have. Yeah. And we learn now, as we study the mind even deeper, that these emotions are felt right in the womb, all the way back to the womb. That little tiny baby is interpreting his or her world through those emotional feelings, picking up the feelings of the parents, understanding through that emotional feeling what's really going on in their world. And so, you know, with that knowledge now, we can assist our children to become the best that they can be with their own unique, individual, beautiful spirits. And always, if you can't say something nice, count to three, come back again and reframe it. Because mm-hmm. you don't want to leave that child with something that could be with them till the day they leave the planet.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, is Dr. Phil, a lot of people follow his program. And the one thing that he says, that when you have a lot of anger and a lot of hostility in a household, and the household is all upset, and then you include the child in that and use a lot of anger and turn kind of towards the child, you basically change who they are.
I agree. Yeah. I totally agree, yeah.
And, you know, so out there, I'm sure we have a lot of people that have gone through some real tough times. And actually, I was talking to one of our parishioners at the chapel, and she and I have a lot of parallels in our life. But what we look at now, because, you know, we've gone to this point of our life and realized that all the things that we went through, used in a positive way, become tools to carve a magnificent future. Whereas if we take it the other side of it and just look at all the negative things that happened and kind of suck your thumb on that, then you basically get stuck down in that time zone and you never create anything for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is true, too, to know that each day that you get up really, truly is a new beginning. And when you realize that within yourself, there's this incredible power. You're a spirit who came here to this place to have a life and to express who you are. And it's sometimes very difficult to do that. But every day can be viewed as a new beginning. And when we take control of our lives and hold on to that steering wheel of our life, there's always an opportunity to move forward and to gain wisdom. Wisdom is what comes from those experiences.
I can't remember who said that youth is wasted on the young. And, you know, wouldn't it be marvelous to be able to have the knowledge that we now have back in the days when we were just starting to create our own life path?
Yes, and Barb, but I have to say at this point, too, when, and this is my own view, it's not necessarily the view of the station or anyone else, but when they're labeling children ADHD, be very, very sure, be extremely sure that that isn't a soul that's there who is way beyond their time, way beyond the system, and I prefer to call it attuned directly to higher dimensions.
Mm-hmm. Did you happen to watch Oprah today?
No, I didn't, no.
Well, it was interesting because they had a young boy on there who now is 10, but at the age of 7, from the time he was young, he had tremendous temper tantrums, and the mom kept saying, this is far beyond normal. But anyway, everybody else was in denial about it, and finally there was a condition there for the boy. But anyway, the long story short is that he basically tried to kill his mom at 7. And then they basically had to face the fact that there's something really going on here. But what they're using with him is the positive energy and a negative energy picture, and that he uses the white light to bring in the positive energy. And when the negative energy comes in, he overpowers it with the white light. And it's really worked wonders for him. And this is in, like, in a medical surroundings, you know, like in psychiatry and whatnot that they've brought this boy through.
Mm-hmm.
And he's handling his life quite well now and came on Oprah with his mom because he says that there's so many other children that have the problem that he has, and they need to know that there is an ability to be able to get that power that you have within yourself in the positive power, or you have a negative power. And it depends, almost like the wolves, which one do you feed, eh?
Yes.
And he's and his mother are really advocates for the thousands of young children that come into this world. And what they've come to now is that they're basically hypersensitive. They feel and sense, their senses you know, their sensory system is highly tuned, higher than the average person. And so it just bombards them. Like when something doesn't go the way, then it puts them in an uncomfortable position. It bombards them with energy that they can't handle.
Yes, and I understand that with testing that they're doing now, they realize the DNA is changing. So we really need to be aware of that expansion, going back to that idea of the shift that we're going through.
Yeah, it's really an interesting thing when you start working. This is like having a can of beans and you're opening up each bean and you're getting all the answers you think. You get down to the last bean, you open up and you find it's another whole can of beans. Because the more that we investigate, the more that we learn, the more we find out we need to learn.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah. But, you know, you take a look at a lot of people have gone through really tough times, they're going through tough times right now. And it really is sitting in your own power. You know, to say that you have to kind of get outside of the problem and start looking at the solution of what's going on, and look at any situation. There's at least 10 options, not always ones you want to take, but there's at least 10 options, even if the last option is the only one that you can have is changing your attitude on how you're receiving it, can make a shift in how you receive, you know, how you react to your environment.
Exactly, and to make an effort not to own your own challenges. Like people will say, oh, I'm just stupid, or I don't know how to do that, or life is really a drag. The verbiage that we used, we're talking to our subconscious mind, which is like a great grand master.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we say in that regard is going directly to that mind and reinforcing that position that that you find yourself in.
Of course, they talk about that right from the time kids are small. And, of course, we continue to do that till the day that we go back to spirit, I guess, and let the physical body go. But, you know, the thing is that the you say to a kid, well, you're rotten, you never amount to anything, that they'll follow that pattern, and that's exactly what they'll do. They'll fulfill the prophecy. It's one thing to say, I don't like your behavior right now. But to say I don't like you because you're bad is a terrible thing to say to a kid.
Yeah, and to say,
I don't like your behavior. It's and even with ourselves, we do something and instead of saying, oh, how stupid am I? If we feel that we've made an error of judgment, say, well, that was kind of a dumb move, you know, or that was, because it's actually the choice that was not good, not the person.
Right.
Yeah.
And just being aware, too, that, you know, whether you're a religious person or open-minded or really not along those lines, there is a truth to the fact that we are connected to this universe into an absolute beautiful line of knowledge that we have only just scratched the surface of. And that resides within all of us. So just to start getting back to that knowledge. It's already in there. There's nothing missing. There's nothing to learn, really. There's only what is there to be revealed. And we can start to reveal that within ourselves any moment of now.
Now, see, you're not as old as I am, Jeannie, so you won't go back as far as I do, but I can remember back in the days when we used to look at comic books and the imagination of the comic writer, cartoonist, was like with Buck Rogers flying around with a pack on his back, you know, going from place to place in the galaxy. And then we look at the reality of that time, and we had a limitation that said, well, we could never do that for real. That has to be an imaginary thing. And yet in my lifetime, I've seen it become a reality. So we certainly are constantly discovering ideas that are already in the universal mind.
Yes.
You're already there. And so when you look at it, though, in one sense, there is a cartoonist, and his imagination is tapping into the same place as the scientists tapped into to create the ability to build the rocket.
Yeah.
Same place. Only one gets it through an imaginary, does a fictitious thing in their cartooning, and it seems to be fictitious, and yet the scientists go further. They have the kind of mind that can work out the ins and outs of how that works, whereas, of course, the cartoonist can't.
Yes, and I believe if you can think it, it can be there.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in that matrix, and I don't like to use matrix that way, but in that divine matrix, that perfect matrix, if you can think it, it's there.
Yeah. Now, an interesting thing to talk about, too, to go into a little different subject.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both work in the mediumship areas, right? And I recently had a call to be on a course. And in that course, I took exception to something that was stated in there. And one of the things that they stated in there, that all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums. And I took a little exception to that because I really think that any time that we're tapping into something outside of ourselves, we are tapping into the same source regardless, right?
Yes.
So I kind of said, okay, fine, I'll feed them back what they want to hear, but I'll put an exception on the bottom of like a disclaimer type of thing and put on there that I didn't really believe the way they set it up. They think that psychics basically look at your aura and read what's in your aura. And myself, I can't see that that's true, because you can't tell somebody a projection on something that hasn't happened yet. It's not in their aura yet. So I think we all have to be tapping into the same source. So there's kind of a little thing to throw up in a question out there. Do you think psychics and mediums basically are working from the same source and they're just working in different ways?
That's
what
great.
Do you think?
Good question.
Good question.
The listeners.
Yeah, and it would be neat to hear what some of the answers are. I mean, not everybody's going to agree with me. I just feel that we get all the same source. It's just different means or different directions of using the same ability and different ways of doing it. I mean, we can have different mediums that we use. We can use cards or we can use whatever. But it's still the source. It's not coming from the card, although the card or the teacup symbol may fall in there so that it is a conversation for you between you and spirit. But there's a lot of things that you say that's not in that card, and it's not in the leaves. It's just coming in from the source information, just giving more information there.
I tend
to think that we have to look at the fact that we're very well connected. Yeah.
I think, too, if everyone would ask themselves that question, they'd find that there's something in their life that's happened that they just cannot explain, and it was either otherworldly or straight through their ability to tap into something that was immeasurable. Everybody's that kind of an experience.
Now, even if you think, how many people could honestly say that they haven't had an episode where they hadn't seen somebody for a long time and just thinking to themselves, gee, I wonder what so-and-so's been up to, and the phone rings and that's the person that you haven't seen or talked to for ages.
Mm-hmm.
And just at that precise moment, you happen to be thinking of them.
Absolutely.
And the phone rings. It happens too many times to be, just, guesswork. So you kind of have to look at thoughts and energy and at what we think really goes out into that universe until it finds, like the arrow, finds this place where it's directed. And it comes in. You're like a receiver and you go, wow, I wonder what Jeannie's doing. And all of a sudden you phone me and I say, for heaven's sake, Jeannie, you must be picking up my psychotic message or something,
That happens between us too, doesn't it?
It does. And it's amazing between yourself and your husband, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I've seen so many times that, you know, it's not like every time my husband goes to the store, we buy ice cream or something. But I can remember thinking to myself, oh, golly, he's gone to the store, and I kind of thought I would have liked to have some ice cream, right? And in he walks with the ice cream. Now, has he looked at the ice cream and said, oh, I think I'm going to buy ice cream? And then I pick up, oh, you know, I should have asked him to buy some ice cream. Or did I say, oh, gee, I think I'd like some ice cream. And he's walking through there and his attention is taken to the ice cream cooler and thinks, I think I'll buy some ice cream. Like the chicken and the egg, which came first?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So well, I'm really interested in hearing other people's thoughts on this. Yeah. We've got kind of an open lines going.
Oh, I haven't, I haven't reduced my thing here, so I should do that, because if I don't, I can't see if they're giving me any information that they got anybody online. So, I don't know what I'm doing here, something. I'm supposed to be able to push something here and be able to read what's going on. Ah, there you go. Full screen, pop up. No, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. I've done it before, but I can't find it. So if he's got somebody on there, he'll have to butt in here, because I can't, I don't know what I've done. I haven't got it down so I can see it here. And no, it's not doing it there. So I don't know what I've done. I'm half asleep tonight or something. I just lost track of what I'm supposed to do here.
Oh, that's okay.
So if anybody's on the line, we could just say hello. Is anybody on the line? No, doesn't sound like it. So we'll just continue to talk.
Okay.
So, hello?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, okay, that sounds good. I thought that I had a different voice.
Uh-huh.
Were you channeling some voices or something?
That's powerful. You know, talking about the power of our consciousness. If you've ever heard of, well, I think he actually talked at the chapel perhaps at some point, Paul Elder.
Oh, yes.
Who wrote the book, The Eyes of an Angel, and his work in remote viewing.
Yeah.
Now, if remote viewing has ever taken place, even with one individual on this planet, that's all that it takes to show us that that is there. So if you can move your consciousness from where you are sitting right now and take it across the planet and be able to perceive what's going on there, that is also extra-dimensional travel. And we all have the potential and the ability to do that when we practice doing it.
Well, you know, it's amazing because many years ago, you remember Raymond Burr?
Yes.
And he did a program. Nobody, I think, knew that he... until that time that he was interested in this type of thing. But he did a program where they had a girl who was blind from birth. She'd never seen our world physically with her eyes because she was blind. But when she would leave her body and astral travel, she had sight. They had her in New York. And she was kind of like laying in a lounge chair. And they had a camera going through a place in California. And so she is describing, as the people come up to the house, what the house looks like, how the pathway comes up and turns slightly to the right and goes up on a little veranda. And then how it went through the door, and to the right was a living room, and described the Chesterfield and the love seat and whatnot that was there, and some commercial cushions and some handmade cushions that were on the Chesterfield and things like that. And then even took her hands and kind of made the shape of the mantel clock with her hands as she was describing what was on the fireplace mantel. And it was just amazing to watch that she's with Raymond Burr in New York and she's blind, and yet she's going through this house with these people as they film it. and describe what they're showing her as she goes through. That was amazing to watch. And I think probably was back in the 80s when I watched it. And how much advanced was that for the time? And people never even kind of looked into why was she able to do that. You know, just...
Fascinating. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, maybe it ties in with the idea that we know, well, I'm convinced anyway, that spirit, if you want to call those that have left the planet that still visit it occasionally, spirit, they have no bodies in the terms that we know it.
No.
They're here in the three-dimensional plane, but they absolutely have all of the knowledge that they would have if they were there. In this place. Mm-hmm.
The thing, too, that I thought was really wonderful with that was that, you know, they were filming it so that everybody could see it, so they could see that there was no, and filming her as well, so they could see there was nothing being fed to her.
Mm-hmm.
And people that were filming, of course, were filming without saying anything as they were going through the house. They were just going along when she'd say, well, you turn right, and then they'd turn right, and the living room is there. And then they pan that from the left to the right, and she described the stuff that was there. And you realize that when in the astral body or in the spirit body, they don't have this physical disabilities that they have when they're in the physical body. So they're released from that. And then, like you were talking about Paul Elder there, when he talks in one part of his book where he goes on an astral travel and sees that lady on the pathway who's been picking her vegetables, and she's just dropped on the pathway and has passed into spirit. And then he sees it with his guide, and then a few times later he goes back, 2 days later, and he sees it on his own and goes down and actually works as a guiding force. As soon as she's down, I mean, she's not there for the 200 years or the 100 years from the time that she, her time and his time. He's there right as soon as she passes, and he is almost like a guiding spirit that takes her to the light. Now, he's not physically in his body at that time on our earth plane, right? But he is a spirit still in the spirit world.
Mm-hmm. I wonder
and so, therefore, is able to go... And there is no time there, so he can kind of cross over to the era that she's from, go down there and work as a guiding force for her. That really opens a whole new dimension of what we're talking about on guides and whatnot, that, yes, we're living in this physical world right now, but when we were a spirit and when we astral travel, are we still connected in some way, working as a guiding force in some other area or era?
Yes, and then, of course, there's the experience of having a past life experience.
Well, yeah.
Where there is no time.
Which basically would answer that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because you could be, you know, you would, as Jeannie, be able to go in that dimension and cross over to that era and then connect with a hosting energy that is working as a personality, a spirit on a physical plane there, and maybe you're working as their guiding force at that point, you know?
Yeah.
Just really interesting. And backwards, you can go forward.
Absolutely, you can go to future lives.
Yeah, and we just did an exercise yesterday. I'm not really into too much circle sitting because I feel I like to teach on my feet, right? And I like meditation, circle for meditation and healing. But as far as like teaching things, I'd rather do them on my feet. And that's just my preference. But we decided that a lot of our group had not had the exposure. So we did a circle last night that we broke into segments and did different types of circles. And one of them was to go to the seat of the soul and do the crossover to other life experiences and into other dimensions on this life, on parallel experiences. And it was just fascinating.
It's like, how far down the rabbit hole do you go, eh? The further
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the further down you go and the more you delve into the power of our own consciousness, it just becomes more magical and fascinating.
Yeah. And it's just absolutely unbelievable. Heather was, as you well know, and you couldn't make it on Wednesday night. You were going to do something for us. And Heather came and did the one on dreams. Now, that was most fascinating for the people that were there. They were really impressed with that and got a lot out of the fact that they were able to find out what pattern their dream was going and what direction their dreams were going. And it actually filled a pattern that they could analyze and see what it was telling them, kind of like a symbolic, or track it with what was going on in their life at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if any of the people that are listening to us tonight have a paranormal or spiritual or otherworldly experience that they could share with us, or a question that they might have regarding consciousness and the power of consciousness.
Yeah, that would be a good thing, except that for some reason or other, this dummy over here can't find the screen, and so I don't know if anybody's phoning in or not. So all we'll have to do is say, hello, is anybody there? And maybe they'll talk to us if they're there. But there's nobody talking right now, so if they can get my daughter to come swinging past me while I'm here, I'll see what I've forgotten to do. I've forgotten to do something here that allows me to take it from this picture that I have of the BBS radio in one great big screen, and I want to take it off so I can see the communication page, you know, where I'm getting notes sent from Zeth, our lovely producer there, and our director. So somehow or other, I've misplaced my brain, and I'm not reducing this. So I'll see what's going on. And that's not it. Anyway, so what exciting things have been happening for you, Jeannie? Or tell us a little bit about some of the different things that have happened that kind of threw you for a loop and got you really curious, got you into this.
Well, I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, and my passion for consciousness and other dimensional understandings along with quantum physics took me into that work. Mm-hmm. And I find now that the more I do it, the more fascinating and more amazing it becomes as people visit the depths of their own consciousness and some of the beautiful, amazing things that come forward for them in that. And every person, you know, there's a reason, I guess, why we all have different thumbprints. We also have different experiences in this world based on our own unique, beautiful vibration. And I'm seeing that most of the people who come for the assistance in hypnotherapy also could certainly use a real boost about how wonderful they truly are. And when they get a chance to visit their own consciousness, they find that out real quick. And I know from the work that I do that we've only just begun to understand our true power. And so when we understand that we're not trapped in our circumstances and that today is a new day, I don't mean it to sound like it's an easy thing to do, but on the other hand, it is. It's a change of perspective, a change of mind. And as soon as the willingness is there to start again, then a whole new vista can be opened. We are magnificent, wonderful spirits.
That's for sure. And the interesting thing, too, with using hypnosis is the fact that a lot of times we can really come into touch with who we are in the true sense of the world, what we show everybody else, or sometimes we want to be people pleasers or whatever. And we even convince ourselves maybe that we're not as smart as we should be or whatever. But when you get into that area of hypnosis and you really come in touch with your inner self. Now, you were talking about maybe coming to do a talk at the chapel on one of our Fun and Learn nights there, a little bit about how you use hypnosis to actually communicate with your spirit workers and guides and things.
Yes.
And give us a little preview on that.
Well, now I'm fully aware that a lot of people, when they think about hypnosis, they think, oh, you know, somebody's going to turn you into a chicken, or you're going to lose your ability to control your own mind, and therefore anything that's unusual must have been put there by the hypnotist. Well, in clinical hypnotherapy, that's the furthest thing from the truth. In fact, we spend a great deal of care making darn sure that we don't put anything into that person's mind. They're driving the car, we're reading the map, and they go on their own special, unique journey. And where that journey takes them is absolutely, utterly amazing. When you tap into the power of the center of your own being, you can literally take that center in all directions, to the past, to the future, beyond this dimension, beyond this universe, and the experiences that each individual has are very, very, very real to them. Mm-hmm. All I can do is trust that when someone has had no background, no belief in anything paranormal, no expectations of going to the future or the past, and they have that experience, they're forever changed. And they're changed in a good way because they know that they've been thinking far less of themselves all the way along.
Yeah, that's certainly a good tool to help person come in tune with their abilities and their talents and their, mostly all their passion.
Mm-hmm. I have had clients in answer to your question about the guides, and that have, in their process of hypnotherapy, actually met their guides right in front of them, and they pop right up without being even beckoned. Mm-hmm. And telling them things like, I have been with you since the beginning of time, and I will always be with you. And it's such a moving experience for the individual. Like I say, they're forever changed.
Yeah. I'll tell you an experience that I had. I was already qualified hypnotherapist with Alpha Clinics, Alpha Centers, that were here in the Lower Mainland for many years. And Richard Clark was teaching at the night school. And Gloria asked me if I would go with her to the class that he was giving on hypnotherapy and things, on hypnosis. And he was going to take people on a trip with hypnosis to come in touch with their workers or whatever. So I said, well, I'll talk to Richard, make sure he doesn't think I'm coming in to, you know, kind of ha-ha at him or whatever. So he didn't feel insecure about it, so I went. And I'm not a person, which you all know, that would just give my power to everybody or permission for them to, you know, take a direction from them. I don't necessarily feel that comfortable with everybody. But with Richard, I just seemed to be very, very comfortable. And I went on this journey, and for many years I had read under the name LaRaven. So when I went on this journey with him, he had said to the class, now, when you're on your journey, you're going to meet some people, and there's going to be one person that stands out more than the other, and see how they're dressed, and gives you all that instruction, and says, talk to them, see what they show you, try to remember everything, and if they will give you a name. So I thought, okay, fine. So I went on this relaxation and down into the hypnotherapy, and level and the suggestion level. And he's doing like a guided trip. And he doesn't say who it is you're going to see. You meet someone, blah, blah. Well, I see this Native Indian man standing on top of a hill. And his hair is just ravenous black. And it's just blowing. And he's stripped from the waist up and has leathers on and a bag of something hanging off the side of his trousers. And I'm invited to go with him down this hillside into this village. Now, I get to the village, and this is the part that really took me back a little bit. The women in the village were wearing kind of the cut that they would wear with the dresses that the native girls were picked to wear, except they appeared to be like print. I guess they were a buckskin, but they had paintings on them like print. And I was really so taken back by this. But anyway, in the process, he shows me all these things. I find out that he is the shaman of the tribe, and he's very well liked. And I said to him, "What is your name?" And he says to me, "Kaltuki Tu." And I said, "And what does that mean?" He said, "The cawing bird." I went, "The raven?" And he smiled. I went, "Oh, my goodness." So I came back. Gloria and I were going home. We're talking about what all happened. And I'm just absolutely mind blown with this experience, right? Mm-hmm. With this person. And he shows up a number of times after that in different things that I'm doing. And has of course, been, I've been aware of him ever since of that. But the interesting thing was that we had a barbecue. And at the barbecue, I'd invited Richard Clark to come and meet a number of other people, like in our group, say. So he's looking across the way from me, and he said, "Barbara, did you ever read under any other name than your own?" And I said, "Yes, I used to read under the name LaRaven." He went, "Oh, my God." And I said, "Well, what?" "Well, apparently when I used to own a restaurant on 12th Street, he happened to be walking by." Now, this doesn't happen by happenstance. This is God-essence. He's coming with a friend of his who is a female friend who is like a confidant. And they're walking down, and they walk past our restaurant that has this big sign in the window that says LaRaven's Inn. And readings available, right? Mm-hmm. So he comes in with this woman. I read for her, and I say, "You know, you're like a geisha to him in the nice form of the word. You are his confidant. You listen to what he has to say. He can tell you anything. It never goes anywhere." And I can recall that. And then I read for him. And I said, "You know, you're on the threshold of an educational step, and you're hesitant to step through the threshold that's wide open for you. If you step through that threshold, you will never look back. But you still have choice to whether you're going to do this or not." And then he leaves. Now, I don't see this couple at all again, as far as I know, in my life. This is probably in 1972, and I think it was in the 80s. That we had gone into this class. So he said, "My goodness, my friend and I have been looking for you forever." And he then proceeds to tell me that they were talking as they were walking down the street about him deciding to take a couple of years off before he did his final year in university. And she kept saying to him, "Yes, that's fine. I understand where you're coming from, but you should seriously think about getting finished and then doing the things that you want to do. I understand you're tired now, but, you know, it just seems that sometimes when we pull away from something, we don't go back." Anyway, they walked in to have the reading, and this is what I told them. So he decided to go back to school, became a clinical psychologist, and, you know, just finished his degree, and everything was just absolutely awesome. And he spent his whole life dedicated from that time on, and I heard from him the last time just a few months ago, And he's a man around the same age as what I am now. And he spent his whole life making people's life better by using the Inner Fitness as a program that they had, that they used along with his hypnotherapy and his other counseling. And just absolutely amazing that you have such influence when you're doing a reading for someone, and such a responsibility to make sure that you're not telling them what to do, but that you're laying the stuff before them and saying, these are the options that you have.
Mm-hmm. And basically, too, to tell that person at any given moment of now, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different directions that they can take.
Exactly.
And as a reader, I pick up on where they're sending their energy. So if their energy is going down a certain line, then the outcome to that energy flow has most of the impact of happening and being the outcome.
But unless they're going to change it, you know, if they got corn planted, it's going to stay corn.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and to realize, too, that the option is there to change your mind.
Yeah.
To plant a different seed. Because, like you say, if you plant corn, you're going to get corn.
And, you know, this is something that I do say in the classes to people, and I say it sometimes even in the church as a counseling tool. Somebody will come in, and they can obviously see that they're trying to change situations that are problems with the same mind that created it, right? And, mm-hmm. and so you say, you know, you're planting corn. And you might want broccoli, but all the praying and even God can't change it to broccoli.
Right.
You know, it's going to be corn. And either you're going to have to like the corn, change your attitude and like the corn, or you're going to have to take the responsibility for dealing with the corn and go on with whatever until such time as you can get that corn dealt with and, you know, go on to put the broccoli in if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But back on this thing was interesting then. Here's a question for you, Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been able to really get the answer to this. Now, when I was talking to this spirit, and he said his name was the Raven, basically, but he said it in his language.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Richard was the one that was doing the guided tour. His voice, his connection, his energy was there. Now, did that trigger off because of the connection that I had with him many years ago when I was LaRaven, the Raven?
Okay, well.
Good question, eh?
Yeah. I believe that every person we meet in our entire lifetime is there by design.
Yeah.
That there is truly no coincidences. So whether we touch each other for a moment or an hour or a lifetime, there's a purpose. And for him to come back into your life full circle all the way around and to share that with you, your soul remembers it to this moment. It was an impact.
It was a fabulous impact. And I know for a fact that the spirit exists.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact that he has worked with me other times, right? I know him to see him. I've seen him. So he is a spirit. He has a personality. That's the name he gave me. But it was so funny that it was connected with someone that I knew when I was LaRaven, and yet I didn't know. Somebody I helped there, but he helped me in turn when the wheel came around, that he was working then on the other side of the fence. He was the one that was the director and the instructor, whereas before when I was doing the reading for him, I was directing or giving the information to him.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the universe magical?
Magic. It just, the goddessence of it is just unbelievable. I like that goddessence, you know? I really do. Because I think, rather than say coincidence, goddessence is really, you know, the word that we're, it's the essence of God,
yes,
you know,
yes.
that we're dealing with. So, what else would you like to say now about some experience maybe that you had? I did finally get this up, and there's nothing coming up here saying flash, flash. So we're still so interested or interesting, whatever it is.
I'll give you a little experience that I had when you're talking earlier about the idea of having parallel lives. Somebody who's read the Seth material by Jane Roberts, written in the 70s, and Jane passed away in the 70s. At the time when I was reading it, it seemed like, whoa, it's really heavy, heady stuff.
Yeah.
But it talked a lot about the idea that we occupy more than one reality at the same time. An example of that I think that I experienced was I was in my home one day, and it was in the middle of the day, and I was sweeping the floor. So I had the little dustpan, and I had the broom sweeping the dust in. And I looked over to my right as I was bent over sweeping it in, and I saw right beside me, about a foot away, in the size of a small television set, a lady looking back at me.
Wow.
And I looked at her, and she smiled at me, and I smiled back at her, and she just kind of looked at me like, now you've seen me, and then she, poof, just disappeared. I really believe that was me in another dimension.
Yeah.
It's just the way it felt. Very,
and
very...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, it's very hard to describe an experience like that, but I was fully awake, fully aware, in my kitchen in the middle of the day, and poof, there she was.
Yeah.
And I just knew when, as I looked into her eyes, there was something about me. It was me and her were linked.
Yeah. It's unbelievable when you think about it. The thing is that basically past lives work exactly the same way, don't they? They're just another line from that seat of the soul that's in a non-time area that lands down in a physical world somewhere in an era somewhere. So if it had thousands upon thousands of them coming down, energy, personalities separate from our personality, but all joined in their soul.
Yes.
That boggles your mind.
It's fabulous stuff. And just to know that, you know, we do have a higher self. When we're having those thoughts that come out of nowhere, or when we have a message or something that's there in the moment and wasn't a moment ago, who's thinking those thoughts? Where are those thoughts coming from? I believe coming from the higher self within us that's beckoning us always to expand who we are, to become more and more of the spirit that we are, and the consciousness is, you know, even at times when it looks like things are going three steps back and one step forward, we're always expanding our souls. Just like the rings of Saturn, we're always becoming more. And
that's interesting, Jeannie, because I've got to the point now that I think our errors of judgment, that we think are errors of judgment, I don't call them mistakes, errors of judgment, I don't know so much if they're not more planned than we know to teach us what we need to know to get to the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, and that takes a lot of the pain out of it, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So,
when we stop looking out there and saying, the reason my life is this way is because of this situation or that person or this thing I'm trapped in truth, it's not that way. We are projecting from inside. We need to look inside. And then look at it a different way as we expand our beliefs, if you want to put it that way. What we believe is what we're going to perceive.
That's for sure. And that's hard for a lot of people to swallow, the fact that we're creating our own reality.
I know.
Even for myself, sometimes it's hard to accept that. That's where we need to take the personal responsibility, is because we do create our own reality.
I know, and it's very easy to say, I couldn't have possibly wanted to create this or that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not something that happens overnight. It's built up over time. That movie is put together frame by frame.
It's interesting that we take so much credit for the things that we do that are smart. And the ones that we make that we would consider errors of judgment that got us into a little bit of soup, we don't like to take the credit for those, but we should take just as much credit for that. You know?
Yes, that's for sure.
But you know, talking about, you know, kind of having messages and that they're coming from somewhere else other than from our own source. One time way back in 1966, we had bought a house in New Westminster. And we'd had a store at one time many years before, and Ozzy had always wanted to go back to the storekeeping business. As a long story short, we had lost everything on a farm and came back to BC and finally had gathered enough together to get this house. Well, one day we're going past a store called Moody Park Store in New Westminster, and it had a sign for sale in it. And Ozzy came out after he went and bought some things in the store, and he said to me, you know, we should buy that store. And I said, what with? And he said, oh, we'll just trade the house. And this was about March, and we'd only bought it in the first of the year. And I said, oh, we haven't got an equity in there to do that. Don't be silly. And I just dismissed it. He dismissed it. We went off to see our friends who lived around the corner. New Year's Day on 67, however, I woke up first thing in the morning and said, Dawes, you know what we're going to do today? And he said, what's that? I said, we are going to go over and buy that Moody Park store. He said, whatever made you think that? And I said, he said, how would we do that? I said, like you said, we'll trade the house. Well, by this time, we've got a year to the day in this house. So we go over and take a look at the store, and they, yes, it's still for sale, even though they don't have a sign there. Long story short, I said to the guy, how much do you want for your store? And he told me, and I did a quick mathematic thing, and how much his mortgage was, that if we did a trade across, I would have to get $12,500 or $16,500 for our house. So I said to him, well, come and see the house. You want to do a trade. And if you want to trade for $16,500. Well, long story, he comes in, they go through it. I'm running it as a boarding house at the moment. Comes down, he said, oh, it's only worth $12,500. I said, to you, it's worth $12,500. To me, it's worth $16,500. And he went away. And Ozzy just laughed and laughed. He said, don't be foolish. Nobody's going to pay that much for this house. And secondly, you know, the guy's not that dumb. I got a phone call the next day. He's willing to give me $16,300 for my house, which is a $200 draw. So I said, okay, so where the ability, at that time I had only gone to grade 9. I had had a lot of learning. I didn't have a lot of education, but I had a lot of learning, and I worked in offices and I read a little bit. So I had a little bit of learning, and I sat down and wrote a real estate contract that was like in legal jargon. And I did not know where all that information came from. And a contract that was not only for us to buy his place, but for him to buy our place, and all of it was conditioned on each other being able to do whatever it was. And when we went to convey it, the fellow that was conveying said to me, who wrote this contract? And I said, I did. And he said, well, you are going real estate. You come work for me. He said, I don't think I have a realtor that could write this. Now, isn't that interesting? First, I get the information from the source, and then the source tells me how to put the contract and write two contracts with a trade deal, you know, so that nobody has to exchange money except for whatever the difference in the stock is.
Mm-hmm. It looks now, like we've almost come to the end of our time, Barb.
And then when I did, years later, go into real estate, I don't think I could write that now. And I did 27 years in real estate. I'd have to sit down and really struggle with how to write a contract that wouldn't get goofed up somewhere in the trade.
Yeah, interesting. Wow.
And you think, well, where in the name of heaven all that come from? Well, Jeannie, you know what? We've yacked away, and it's almost out of time here.
Okay. I just want people to know, if they want to know anything more about hypnosis or hypnotherapy, to contact me at West Coast Hypnosis. I'm happy to answer any questions.
And, of course, if they want to come on a Sunday morning to see a great spiritual Sunday service and feel like they're in a community that they like, come to Inner Garden in Surrey at 146 Street and 64th Avenue, right on the corner, unit number 100. And we'd love to see you. And I'd love to see you soon, Jeannie, and thank you for working with me.
Oh, thanks.
Thank everybody for listening.
My
and
pleasure.
BBS Radio, we say thank you.
Good night.
Good night.